outsiders only. This is SkyTerror.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Outsiders Only, the SkyTerror podcast of the game SkyTerror by PvP Geeks. This week I am joined by my main man, Christian. Rem, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, everyone?
And this week we have a special guest. We have the Tim Bunn joining us to talk about a lot of exciting things. Tim, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing just fantastic.
That's great to hear. So this week we actually wanted to bring Tim on. We teased it last week to talk about this sacred rules document that him and Tapeworm have been working on. But before we jump into that, Tim was participating in the very first World Series qualifier, which happened this past Sunday. And Tim got to play, which was really neat because this was the first use of Ashen Pass in a competitive environment. Tim, why don't you just give us a little rundown about your thought process going into this?
Yeah, so whenever they announced that this was going to be on the one lane map, my playtest partners, Woot and Ian, immediately pivoted to playing on the one lane map almost exclusively.
Nice, yeah.
And, you know, we would try to get as many games in as possible before that first one. So I probably had 10 or more games under my belt before the tournament, which felt good. I felt like happy about it. My record was abysmal against Eric, which is pretty normal. He's very good at the game. And then I had a medium record against Ian. Both of them were playing a lot of Brilvar, and I immediately knew that Brilvar was going to be a problem regarding that map because he can just soak so many attacks, and you only have so many each round, which means it can be hard to actually push a lane because it's hard to kill minions if you can't attack them. And so I actually teched my deck a lot against Brilvar. I put in, what's that 2-mana Karumo card that's +2 damage and piercing? Anyways, I put the +2 damage and piercing card in there for it. I was trying to switch my lineup around. I put Hogusai in to try to deal with armor. And I tested a bunch of that. And I was like, okay, I feel fine going into this tournament. And then I proceeded to go 0-4. And it was my first three rounds were all against Brilvar, and he just destroyed me still, even though I put all those cards in. So Brilvar is very, very good. That was my biggest takeaway from the tournament, is that he's just even better than he normally is in this specific map.
And what did you play yourself?
I was playing a green-red deck. So it was Akimo, Ishatosk, Akla, Nalaklan, Hogusai, and my last one was not Kichi. Oh, it was Zekol. Mm-hmm. I was designing it mainly to try to be super aggressive because I had an inkling that that would be pretty powerful on the Ashen Pass map because heroes don't respond.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, if I can just take heroes off the board, you know, like they always say, dead heroes can't lead. And, you know, it's pretty great. I mean, you can kill a hero turn one pretty easily because the map is so small. Yeah. Have you guys played many games on the map?
I haven't played any.
I have watched the qualifications. Okay. I have secondhand experience at least.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised. I was also expecting, and we talked about this last week as well, like the potency of kill decks on Ashen Pass. So I was kind of surprised to see some push decks or some control decks on the map this time around.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised, one can say. I was expecting as well, like seeing kill only. Mm-hmm. Did you play only against aggressive decks in your four matches?
So the first three games were against blue, you know, push decks. Blue or blue-green. The first two were mono-blue, and then the third game was blue-green.
Oh, nice. I was like, last week, I was like, I have a feeling that like blue-only decks could be pretty nice because you have a lot of synergies when the Leviathan heroes are close to each other.
100%.
But we weren't sure what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, no one really did, right? I mean, there's so few games played on this map so far because it's so new. But playing the map, you get a real sense for how small it actually is. Yeah. Like, it's way easier to get places than you think it might be. So things like fast are immediately not as good as you want them to be. Things like slow aren't as good as you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also get into your enemy's deployment zone very easily turn one, which was the whole game plan for me, was to get their side of the board and be able to do two or three attacks with a chemo, two or three attacks with Akla, and take out a hero and do some serious damage to someone else.
Yeah, I had the feeling like it wasn't a problem to kill an enemy hero turn one, but the difficult part was deciding which hero to take out first.
Definitely, definitely. But the key thing about Brovar is that he sort of makes that choice for you, in that you get a move up with your hero, and he can, as his second activation or in response to you actually trying to make a kill, get Brovar into position to prevent, you know, the attacks from hitting the squishy character. So you have to get through his three armor, or, you know, deal with it with piercing somehow.
Yeah. And then the nice side effect that he's also giving armor to his fellow friends, and with the prevalence of assassins and other non-mage attackers, armor is suddenly pretty good.
Yeah, it definitely, in one of my games, I skirmished and then moved with a chemo to get into range. And then with one of his other heroes, he cast Impervious on the hero I was targeting.
Hmm.
And I had three chemo attacks coming, but with that extra two armor, it was just not worth it. So I was like, okay, well, Akima's just going to end his turn after one attack and then hope to not die. Spoiler alert, he died.
So the 18 health was irrelevant. It's the armor that comes into play, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because with Frenzy, if that's how you're doing all of your damage, every point of armor is minus either double or triple, depending on how many attacks you're coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just huge. And that's one of the reasons why I think that the blue blob, as it were, was so prevalent, is because people assumed that people would think that aggro was very good. But it actually has all of the healing cards, which can pivot into damage. It has all of the taunt. It has all of the armor. It's just obnoxiously good. And then it has presence. Presence is a no-brainer because you only have one lane that you really care about. Astrida converting minions. It just is a very aggressive and oppressive deck.
The thing I'm wondering now is if we should call the deck Blue Balls. Maybe
you would go
that's
there.
That's what's on my mind while you were talking.
You had blue balls on your mind.
I played how was the organization? How was it to participate in this event?
Oh, it was great. It was very well ran from everything I could tell. Some of the rounds went a little long, but I mean that's any tournament I've ever been in.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a game that goes to time and then it takes 10 or 15 minutes to finish the round that they're on.
I think they upped the playtime from initially 60 minutes to 70.
It was to 75.
75, yeah. Okay.
And with a new map, I mean, that's going to happen too, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was about spot on for most games finished in time. One or two maybe each round went to time. So it felt like it was a very good amount of time. I'm interested to see how fast the map gets in person, because those games are pretty quick. And then I'm interested to see just how fast they go online after we've had, you know, a few months of repetitions on the map.
Yeah. And how did you like playing with a time limit? Because that's something we haven't had so far. Even in the leagues, we play for however long it takes.
I personally like it because I've found that a lot of games that go super, super long, the game is over before it's over. So it's going through a lot of, not motions, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
Always. And most of the time they don't. So it just sort of expedites the process. So a lot of times, like even whenever we're testing games, at a point where we're pretty sure someone's going to win and we're not going to glean any more new information from it, we'll just call it there and start the next game.
Yeah.
Or you're taking a lot in tournaments too.
Yeah. Or you're taking like quite a few minutes to eke out the last 5% of what could happen and do the optimal thing. But the baseline is already covered. And so you're just spending a lot of time thinking although it's probably not necessary. I mean, that's the mark of a good player if you think about stuff ahead. But it's also, even when I'm watching games, there are a lot of times there aren't any things happening, so we need good commentators to cover this time because nothing is happening in the game. So yeah, it's tricky. But I also like the time limits from watching to it, because it kept the games going. 100%. I would even like having something like chess clocks, not really, I think it's not applicable, or it's just annoying. But the thought of me having a time bank and the other player having a time bank and having it distributed equally, I love the idea. So, but yeah, it's not easy to implement.
Chess clocks are probably one of my favorite mechanics I've ever seen in any game ever. Any competitive game, at least. Mm-hmm. Because the idea that I can take as much time as I want to and not feel bad about it is great. Because if I take, 20 minutes on one turn and I'm okay with that as a player, that's awesome. But if I take 20 minutes on my turn and you're penalized because of that, that's not good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And whenever you're playing at a tournament and you feel like having to tell your opponent, so can you please speed up a little? We're getting into it's time. Not, it's always a bad feeling, I think.
It's awkward, yeah. Or heaven forbid you have to call a judge over for slow play.
Yeah.
It's never fun, but I mean, I've done it before.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, because you feel sort of like a jerk. Like, are they actually slow playing, or are they just taking time? You know what I mean? They're like, you never know the true intention of what's happening.
And even if they're not doing it maliciously, like sometimes, I mean, I know people and I've been this person. Turns just take longer than others. But when there's only 10 minutes left in the round and I'm pretty sure I can win if we can get to next round or, whatever it is in that specific game. It's like, can you just speed up a little bit, please?
Yeah,
and I think there is also a skill to playing fast. It's not you can be good at the game, you can be very, very analytical, but it's also a skill to come up with solutions fast. So
yeah. In one of the games I used to play way back was Monster Apocalypse. You guys ever hear of it?
I know it from the Team Covenant videos, actually. So
So I would I played that back then with them.
Yeah.
But you had 5 minutes on your turn to do everything that you're going to do. And then whenever it's up, you just are dice down. It goes to your opponent's turn. But I was a very, very fast player. And because of that, I was able to, take my turn in 30 to 40 seconds, meaning my opponent only had 30 to 40 seconds to think about their turn. So I could play my next turn during their turn. And I was able to just keep the pressure on, so they always felt on the back foot there.
That's really interesting. Cool.
What is your thought of going first or second on Ashen Pass?
So it's funny because whenever I first started testing on the Ashen Pass, I thought that going first, at least with my aggressive deck, was the correct choice. Mm-hmm. Because that flux can be huge and you can get an extra frenzy card off, or you can get like Burning Rage off turn one to get that extra attack. But as I've played more and more, and then after the tournament, I really think that going second could potentially be the right choice. Because of the way that killing heroes and respawning works on the map. Mm-hmm. So whenever you kill a hero, they respawn immediately in whatever state the killed hero was in. So if you go first and you kill a hero, you're killing their hero, but they get a hero back immediately that can just activate. Go ahead.
Not really removing a body.
Right. You're not removing a body. You're removing some abilities, which can be huge. But if you go second, you get the last activation, which means you can 100% kill a character after they've exhausted. Or secure an outsider. So that they can't actually get an activation out of them this turn. So the answer is the verdict's still out, but I'm leaning towards second right now in general on the Ashen Pass.
Cool.
Interesting.
So maybe we can. I really love it when this question is not figured out. And there was a conversation I just read between Gameslayer and Ashun. Shout out to Ashun, who won the first qualifier.
Yeah.
And they were discussing going first or second as well. And Ashun, our champion, was like, ah, he wants to go first because it creates tempo. You can remove, and just like what you said, remove an important ability, etc. So, but I like the fact that good players are still not sure what's right or what's wrong, or are maybe 100%. Not of the same opinion.
That's one of the things I loved when I first started playing SkyTerror, was that me and Eric had played, and we both thought that immediately that going second was more powerful than first on the two-lane map. And like, it wasn't even a question for us. It's like, we always wanted to go second. But then we started looking at the stats and what people were saying, and they wanted to go first. And it's like, one of us has to be right, but at that moment, it's like, no one really knows yet. And the fact that there's something so simple that is not a known quantity means that the game is very deep and very nuanced, which is awesome.
For sure.
I would like to see like win percent stats ratios of a control deck going first versus a control deck that goes second. If you have a significant, because we know that first or second on the win percentage is like almost 50-50 in general. But I'd be interested to see if I play a control deck and I go first, what is my average percentage versus me as a control deck going second?
So I think that I saw at one point it was either Tape or Problematic had broken it down to not necessarily control or aggro as first and second, but what he would assume are control or aggro. He broke it down by a win objective. So what the objective was won by. So if it was won by a control objective, first or second, which player won? And it was pretty close to even. There was a lot smaller data pool from that one, but it was definitely very interesting. The stat I would be most interested in knowing is the win percentage of the person who wins the coin flip. Not whether it's first or second, but just if they got their choice.
Interesting.
Because I think that is potentially more relevant than first or second, because I think some decks will want to go first and some will want to go second.
So when the decision is in your hands, is it benefiting you, basically?
Correct.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool.
Because it's possible, and because we haven't collected the data, but that 90% of the people that win the coin flip win the game. I don't think that's true, but it's possible. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. For sure. All right, so let's move on to you as a commentator in the SkyTerror community. So, first things off, how did you come into this role as a commentator? Like, do you have a history of doing this, or is it just something that you've always wanted to do and jumped at it?
I mean, I've done quite a few commentary videos whenever I was working with Team Covenant. We did a lot of commentary for X-Wing, for Netrunner, and for Imperial Assault. Zach and I did a lot of those together. So I've done quite a bit of it in my history. And they were asking for people that would be willing to commentate, because the larger the pool they have to pull from, the more likely they are to get it covered, you know? And so I volunteered, and then I just sort of stepped in. My playtest partner, Ian, and I have been, you know, doing several of them together. And so that's been nice. Ian and I have known each other for several years now, so I think we have a pretty good rapport.
Yeah, definitely. We realized by listening or watching immediately that this wasn't probably not your first time doing this. So
thanks.
Experience pays off, I guess.
You never know. I really enjoy it. I love analyzing the game. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that it at least is coherent.
Yeah, I think you're a dynamic duo, and you're keeping us entertained.
So do you find there's any like challenges when you're commentating, or what are the big challenges, I guess, when you're commentating SkyTerror? Cause it's quite unique.
Yeah, I agree completely. The biggest challenge in any commentary is dead space. So whenever someone goes into the tank thinking for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, just being able to have any semblance of a coherent conversation going during that is real rough, because there's nothing happening. So you have to find other things to ask or talk about. A lot of times I like to pose a question to whoever I'm commentating with about their thoughts on what is your opinions on first or second player, or, you know, anything like that, to just sort of have some sort of conversation happening, so people can, you know, not have to listen to silence, because silence is one of the most unnerving things for a lot of people.
Well, that's why we have elevator music, huh? Maybe this is a new concept for a SkyTeam commentary.
For this, do you have like a stock of questions you like to ask, or do you kind of just know some that you'll bring up at any given time?
I think a lot of it just has to deal with the specific game that you're playing. I don't have them like written on a list or anything. It's just a matter of finding something that is tangentially related to the game that's happening to, you know, induce some conversation with your co-caster. And I think that that's one of the most important things that a commentator can do, is to keep the content interesting, even whenever the content isn't interesting. Because whenever someone's making big plays or like complicated stacks, like that's easy. You just say what's happening so people can understand and follow what's happening. Speculation on what they're going to do is fun, but you can only speculate so much because there's hidden information, right?
Yeah, there's this this guy who like gives stream advice, and he was like, if there's ever a dead space, his favorite question to ask is, if you could choose any starter Pokemon, what would it be? Because everyone will always have an answer, and it always creates a dialogue. I love that one. I thought that was so funny.
What's a Pokemon?
So another challenge that I think there is with streaming games is like, how do you show the board? How do you show the action of what's going on? I see that there are different approaches. Like you have the camera zoomed out and show everything, or moving the camera around. So I think that's still something that is being refined. Do you have any takes on this? How you want to show the board?
Oh, I have lots of them. I don't know if they're right or not, though. So to me, I'm fine with camera movement. I don't think that the camera should ever, like, imagine you're looking at a SkyTier game, like you're sitting down to play. I think the camera should always stay on one side of the board. So I don't think it should like flip back and forth. I think that creates confusion for people watching, you know, especially for the commentators. Because if I'm saying, you know, in the left lane here, I think he's going to do this. But if the camera is positioned in a way that left lane is not what I'm talking about, it's going to create a lot of confusion. So I think having it stick on one side of like an imaginary line of scrimmage, if you will, is important. And then I also think that being close enough so you can actually discern which models are which is huge. And that's one of the problems currently, right? Because you want to zoom in to see that, but then you can't see heroes activating or, you know, playing power cards or leading. So you have to strike a good balance between zooming in and out and being able to see the heroes and the flips from the discards.
Yeah, I definitely realized this when I was watching in the bed on my smartphone. When you have a very zoomed out view, you can't see anything, versus when you're sitting on your computer and have a nice big screen where it looks like you play the game yourself. But if you're just watching on another device, I really appreciate some close-up shots of the action.
100%. Whenever I'm at work, I have my phone with the stream up, and I have, like, you know, a headphone in while I'm working on whatever it is I'm working on that day, and I can't see anything on it. I'm just listening to the commentators and watching the, you know, vague movements happen. And I think that's a big concern, right? Like, you want most people that are watching on the phone to be able to tell what's going on, at least somewhat, because that's where I imagine a large percentage of people that are watching these videos would watch it from, if it, you know, looks good enough for them.
Yeah, and shout out to Tape for our nice streamer overlay.
Yeah, that, I mean, that helps a lot. That helps a ton. I can't imagine trying to play that without, trying to watch a stream without that HUD anymore.
No, I had an opponent who actually liked using it, because it was a great way of you still like being aware and keeping track of your APs that you've gone through. And I noticed a difference when you sometimes don't have it. You're always like, oh, did I do this yet? And just using it and getting into that habit, I think is almost something that should become doctrine in a way, because it's really helpful.
Yeah, it definitely can be. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's, you want to be able to convey the board state and what's happening as easily as possible to as many people and devices as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the visual cues are just invaluable.
Now, if we could get tape to add an exhausted, unexhausted section on the HUD somehow, that would be the real
thing. Yeah, that would be awesome.
I talked to him about this, like, if the hero card is rotated, can you gray out the health tracker of the hero or something like this?
I don't know much about tabletop simulator programming, but from what I do know, I think that should be possible. It's just a matter of the time it takes to get it done.
Yeah, we just say it's possible and he has to make it. So, yeah.
His list infinitely gets longer every day.
So, Tim, what is your favorite part about streaming and commentating on stream? Like, what is it that you love about it? Because you keep doing it, and you wouldn't keep doing something unless you didn't enjoy it. So I'm just curious what keeps you fueled with this.
I mean, so a lot of it is just my passion for the game. Like, I've played a lot of games in my life. I've played a lot of them very competitively, and very few of them have taken me as much as SkyTear has. And so being able to watch high-level play, usually high-level play, and analyze it with friends and people that I, you know, respect and entertain me is just fun. I mean, who doesn't like to talk about the things that they like? Whatever it may be, whether it's painting or games or, you know, scrapbooking, like, people like what they like. And I think they like to talk about it. And streaming gives me a way to talk about the thing that I like a lot, but it gives it to me in a way that it's also helping the community. At least I think it's helping the community. Mm-hmm. And I really like that because I like to see this game grow and, you know, get as big an audience as possible. Because I know how much fun it is, and I want everyone else to know how much fun it is.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
Like, when you stumble upon one of those so-called lifestyle games, you just want to, or at least I want to, immerse myself as much as possible and, like, do things besides playing. I want to think about it and, I don't know, record a podcast or something crazy. So
who would do that?
That's so 2005.
I remember whenever podcasts first started coming on the market and thinking, who would want to listen to those?
Yeah, same, like, for me.
I listen to 10 plus hours of podcast a week now. It's like my main form of media consumption.
100%, yeah. And what advice would you have for other people who wish to get into the commentating scene? Because I think the community only benefits from having a greater pool of people who are interested in partaking in this.
Yeah, I mean, so the handful of things that I would recommend is, first of all, just play a lot of the game. Get very comfortable with the game and the card names and, you know, common lines of play so that you can see them coming and be able to talk through them so that you can help the people that don't really follow what's happening follow it. Because that's whenever most of the most interesting interactions are happening in the game, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever someone plays, you know, 3 redirects on 1 stack, it's confusing. Mm-hmm. And I think that being able to walk newer players through that so they can see how that works not only helps them understand the rules better, but is also more interesting for them. The second one would be, I think that you need to be willing to pause when you're talking. A lot of people try to fill all noise the whole time. And I think being able to slow down, compose your thoughts and say it makes it way more coherent whenever you're listening to it. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, thinking I should do this in this podcast. So
it's one of the hardest things to do, and I've done it 1,000 times already in this podcast. I've said and us, and it's very hard to
Blake
stop that.
For this. He just cuts it out. So yeah, it's no worries.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of recorded media, but. The less you can do that on the front end, the more coherent, like I said, I've said that a lot today, the better the end product's going to be.
Sure.
And I appreciate you more.
Yeah. You get less hate from him post editing this stuff.
I try.
No, it's good. Yeah, that's honestly great advice. I really do like the one about not being afraid of some silence and taking a beat just to have a better thought instead of one that just continues on, like the Michael Scott version where he says, sometimes I start a sentence and I don't even know what I say and I just hope along the way I'll find it. Yeah, we don't need to do that.
Exactly. And obviously, I don't want you to, if you're going to be commentating, don't just sit there and, but like, you know, have some amount of time where you're formulating your thought, and that's fine. People are okay with that. It's very natural. It's how humans talk. Mm-hmm. It's very rarely do you find someone that can just talk for 30 minutes straight without ever pausing to formulate their thoughts or anything like that.
Yeah. That's where you have to learn how to be a freestyle rapper.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so regarding freestyle, I'm doing the crazy transition. Obviously, freestyle climbing involves having a cliff or hanging from a cliff. And we had a mm-hmm. pretty epic cliffhanger in the last podcast where Tapeworm announced your...
Yes, Christian is the dad.
Let me do my thing. Come on.
It's like the best segue I've ever heard.
So you're working on a rules document. Spoiled. Tell us about it.
So Tape obviously loves rules. He knows them in and out. I also love rules from a young age whenever I got betrayed by my brother for not knowing a rule. I hate losing games because I don't know the rule. That always is the most frustrating thing to me. So I, whenever I'm playing a game seriously, try to know the rules as best I can. So I've talked to Tape a lot about a lot of rules. And we were talking about how awesome it would be to have what we're calling the comprehensive rules guide or document.
CPG.
Which, do it?
The CPG. I mean, we always need abbreviations.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, CRG then.
Yeah, CRG, CURG. because Ricardo and Giacomo are awesome. But I do not believe that English is their native language. And so there were a lot of rules that are not necessarily the most clear or concise. And there's a lot of, you know, vagueness to them in how you could interpret them. And we've gotten a lot of clarification from them, you know, throughout the months and months of playing this. And we were talking about making a guide that lays out all of the rules in a very formal way, in a very non-conversational way, because the current rule book is very conversational in teaching you how to play. But we don't really have a place for all of the rules to live in a, how do attacks actually work completely, like every aspect and facet of it. And so we've gone through and we're getting pretty close to being finished with it for now, at least. It's going to be a living document. But we have all of the rules laid out and clarified in a what we think is a logical manner. Rules are numbered in a very legalistic way, so they're easy to reference.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, like according to rule 5.101, blah, blah, blah.
And you can't do this. You're disqualified. Bye.
Exactly. That's the whole point. But really, it's just a way for anyone to be able to have a question about a rule.
Yeah.
And have a place to look and figure out how it's supposed to work.
No, that's great. Because I've noticed that if you're playing a game and a rules query comes up, it's going to severely delay the movement forward of the game because you're either going through all the pages trying to find the right section, or if that seems like you're not getting the right clarification, then you're having to go into the Discord and pose it, which luckily there's a lot of people who answer quickly. But it does slow down the flow of the game when you get to that point.
Yeah, and the whole thesis of the document was we want a singular document that someone can go to and answer any rules question that they might have. Obviously, we're not perfect, so we'll miss things, or there will be questions posed in a way that is hard to find, and we can update the document as we go. But it's just a very convenient way for people to be able to solve their own problems Really, it's just a long form way for a tape to not have to answer rules questions.
we do everything for ourselves, I think, at the baseline. So he wants to get...
It seems most of his creations result in him wanting to not have to do something, so he creates it as a result.
Exactly.
Deck spawning.
I think this document would also be like an invaluable resource for tournament games. Like if you do them in person or even online, having the floor rules or however you want to call them, having the definitive rule document is like very important.
Yeah, for sure. And that was a large part of why we did it, you know. Tape is not always going to be there for you. So it's a matter of having a resource that is easily searchable and indexed and laid out in a logical manner in, you know, at least the version that we made, native English, because sometimes things get lost in translation and we, you know, have worked hard to try to make everything as clear as possible.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode for our main topics, but we cannot end an episode without having something that we've learned be passed on to everyone. So Tim, I understand you have the
sinkhole
for this week.
So what I would say as the thing that I've learned this past week that is hyper important is how important attacking minions can be. It's very easy to get in your head that, oh, I'll just win a control lane by a lot to kill the minions. That doesn't work out like you want it to. It doesn't. And by being able to attack multiple times with the against minions, you're able to really reduce that control while also being able to lead and push a lane even harder. It's very easy to get tunnel vision on what you're doing and ignore minions because they don't seem as cool as to attack as heroes. But being able to win the game is more entertaining to me.
Especially when you have the new frenzy and you're like getting into berserk rage and I can do 8 damage now.
Oh yeah, that's super common. So in the summer, not summer, the World Series, I was using the Dark Vigilante, and sadly the amount of times I had to kill 3 minions with it was more than I wanted it to be. Because it's not anywhere near as cool as, you know, doing 10 damage to a hero, but...
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've been saying for a long time in this game is you can't win if you lose. So right. you have to not lose first, and then you can focus on winning.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's cool. Well, thank you. That's a good one. So frenzies for minions. Don't overlook this because you're flipping 5 or 6 damage into a minion. That's totally okay. You have the Tim Bunn seal of approval that is fine.
You do. In fact, it's encouraged.
All right. So you can find us all on the Discord in our various capacities. Tim, are you just Tim Bunn on Discord?
I'm Tim Bunn on Discord. I'm Tim Bunn basically everywhere. Facebook, Instagram,
real life.
Twitter, real life. Yeah, that's me.
All right. Easy, easy peasy. And Christian, where can they find you? What's your handle there?
I'm Rem on the Discord.
And you can find me as Boulevard Paper Fight, and I'm hoping to get to jam some Ashen Pass this week as I have not yet done so, and I have a spicy deck idea that I want to test out. So, until next time, everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Outsiders only. This is SkyTerror.